exchange of copies.
Hi, Mr. Casey, my name is Tom Walters. I'm a producer at W5 at CTV, and my colleague Elizabeth Cook passed along your name and number to me. I was interested in finding out a little bit more about both the sucrose support group and the media support group, and I'd be very pleased to have a chat with you at some point at your convenience. I can be reached at 5-9.
Hello?
Oh, hello.
Yes.
Oh, is that Mr. Casey? How are you doing today?
Fine.
As I was mentioning to your machine, my colleague Elizabeth Cook passed along your name and number, and I was interested in finding a little bit more about the both the sucrose group and the media group, and I'm just wondering if you could contact.
Well, I'm in the middle of something, but it's okay if we can make it brief.
Oh, well, fair enough. Or I could call you back at a more convenient time.
It's okay. I like to take things one thing at a time.
Fair enough.
Now, I believe we spoke with Ms. Cook a week or so ago.
Yeah, that's right. And that, she mentioned that she had a chat with you, and I was just interested in getting a little bit more information about, for starters, about the media the media group. Who are the people that the group is set up to assist? I'm just wondering, because I haven't really heard.
Well, the media group is very new. And this is one of the reasons why, at this point, we have decided that we're not prepared to be sleeping in classrooms and, you know, coming home and watching the Late Late Show and then the Late 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 Show and then, you know. And I'm one of the founding members of that organization.
Now, is it your view that represents an addiction in the sense of requiring a 12-step program?
Well, you know, it's difficult. It's not difficult. You know, we first of all, you know, I don't want to get into this again too deeply because I, you know, these are confidential things, and I don't mind sharing these with you so that you know what the situation is. But
sure,
again,
this is
it's confidential.
Off the record call. This is
yeah. Okay. Fine.
On my part, and everything we say is off the record.
All right. Well, the bottom line is I'm an alcoholic, and you know, when I first heard that sex and love addiction was an addiction.
Right.
I didn't want to hear about it, you know, and there is a program called Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous.
Right.
I don't know if you've
right.
ever heard of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's other things like Gamblers Anonymous, there's Debtors Anonymous, compulsive spending,
right.
You know, is that an addiction, you know? Likewise, I think it's how you want to define an addiction, I think. There is some sort of payoff in terms of the neural, you know, in terms of psychology, and I'm not a psychologist, at least from a professional perspective, but there is a payoff, and the payoff medicates feelings, emotions, you know, the childhood issues.
Right.
And so it's a form of escape that actually medicates, and the root of it is that, you know, as long as we're medicating, we need, you know, it's just like a drug or any other thing that medicates.
Well, I've heard the theory advanced, and I'm not sure this may be, maybe this is in some Neil Postman's writing, but it's the theory advanced that there is a physical kind of stimulation from television because of the constantly changing images that's more extreme than anything you would get in, you know, in real life. That it does have a you know, an effect that.
Yeah, we're not just talking about television either. It's almost like, you know, there's also Workaholics Anonymous. We answer the phones for them, too. And it has to do with the idea that we're always looking for some way out of our emotion, which is painful or otherwise, you know, something that we can't deal with. And the way we medicate with this, or let me paraphrase that in another way, I was going to say there's a comparison between workaholism and media addiction. It's some way in which we can constantly be occupied and in a way so that we do not have to face whatever it is that we're supposed to be feeling. It's a kind of a denial of our feelings.
And whether that's an excess of work or whether it's an excess of
whether it's television or computers, you know, like there's the typical story, you know, on the internet, you know, and then switch the internet off, turn on the television, you know, turn the television off, pick up a book, you know, go from a fantasy novel over to some radio program and then back to the computer again, you know, like
yeah,
this. So that, you know,
actually direct the experience of life.
Yes, completely wiping out anything that's coming in, you know, in terms of your inner emotions and inner thoughts and creative processes and all these irrational things that are coming up at you, you know, that you, I don't want to deal with it, you know, just turn something on and forget about it.
Yeah.
And so that becomes a pattern, and it's a compulsive, and of course when it's compulsive, then it becomes gradually, you know, an addictive pattern, and this is the way, you know, we do daily, day in, day out. And then of course with junk food, if you apply both of those together, the sucrose addiction,
right.
I was explaining to your colleague about sucrose addiction, there's an excellent video at the Toronto Reference Library where Linus Pauling, among others, talks about sucrose addiction and what it does. And one of the psychotherapist or psychologist, I can't remember, or a neuropsychologist, something. He did a little diagram of what the sucrose, the sugar levels do to the higher brain functions. They just wipe them out. So you're actually talking to a person on his lower cortex. You know, you're talking to his spine rather than his brain, you know. Now, if you're medicating in both ways, you know, with sucrose addiction and television, you're getting this, you're talking to the reptilian brain there. You're not talking to the higher functions where we have the Ten Commandments and,
yeah,
you know, all
yeah.
And that reptilian brain is operating on these basic functions like feed me, sex, you know, violence, you know.
Right.
And, you know, you're blasting it with 40 hours a week in the case of children, you know, even preschoolers, right?
Yeah.
Of violence and more violence and, you know, the effect is scary, okay?
When did you come to the conclusion that you had a problem with this stuff?
Well, this didn't come overnight by any means.
Yeah,
I've been in AA now for 15 years. I've been an AA member for 15 years, and you know, in the first, it took me about 6 years. I was a low bottom case. I had cirrhosis of the liver. I'm a miracle in terms of my medical recovery because I was supposed to be dead 15 years ago. I had three. Apparently, the doctors have given me between 3 to 6 months to live, and my liver is healed today, which is a miracle. You know, in terms of medical science, that's not supposed to happen. But in any case, it took about 6 years for me to recover physically and mentally. You know, it took a long, long process. And then when I get, this is in volume one, number one, a very rough sort of outline for Sucrose Anonymous that we put out, this story of how eventually I got to realize that there was some connection between my junk food. You know, because the diet of an alcoholic, although I was entertaining, you know, living in hotel rooms and living in restaurants, you're not exactly eating the most nutritious food in the world, you know? And if you're, if you're 26 ounces a day just to get sober of alcohol, you know, it's not exactly nutritious diet. So one of the things that Bill W., the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, spoke oftentimes about was the fact that alcoholics are in desperate need of vitamins, B-complex vitamins. And these are precisely the vitamins that are destroyed by caffeine, by coffee, and that are used up in the process of digesting sucrose, which this again is a very good illustration in that video, sugar trap it's called. I was mentioning this to Mrs. Cook, I think it is.
Yeah.
And that basically in order to metabolize sucrose, other natural sugars bring vitamins into the body. Sucrose, on the other hand, takes vitamins out of the body in order to be digested. So what you have is a person who is in desperate need of B complex vitamins. Now the thiamine and the niacin are necessary to keep the molecular nervous system functioning. You know, and those are B complex vitamins, thiamine and niacin. So if you have no niacin working, you're just, it's like running a machine without oil. You eventually wear run the gears down, and you're, I'm using it obviously as an analogy or allegory, I don't know. But in any case, this is what I was experiencing. I was experiencing depressions. I was experiencing terrible, you know. And this is what Bill W. spoke of, you know, that people with 6 years of recovery in AA or 10 years, they end up committing suicide. Black depressions, you know? Why? Because these vitamins, these things that are necessary have never been replenished, and they keep continually, because the immediate withdrawal pattern of the alcoholic is, I'm off alcohol, but I drink 7 or 8 cups of coffee with 3 spoons of sugar in each cup of coffee.
Right.
Because we're actually sucrose addicts as well.
Well, I guess there's so much sugar in alcohol, but
exactly. The thing is, they call it sugar. That's what's so misleading. They should actually call it sucrose, because it is the chemical name. And in fact, they even we found that I have found in, you know, many, after a long period of, you were asking me about the process or how I arrived at these conclusions. You know, I finally decided, you know, I don't want any sugar. I'm not going to take it anymore. I went home. I was living in New Orleans. I was entertaining there on Bourbon Street. And I come home one day and I said, this is it. I'm not going to eat any more junk food. That's it. No more sugar. You know, I was living in a Creole cottage. There were high ceilings like they have in Europe. And the kitchen, you know, with the cupboards going right up to the ceilings. And they were all stocked with food and double-door refrigerator. And I ended up 3 o'clock in the morning with 3 huge garbage bags full on the kitchen floor, and the cupboards absolutely empty. Nothing.
Wow.
You know, that was my first lesson, you know?
Yeah.
Lesson one, you know?
Well, a lot of people, though, would never have been able to come to that conclusion, would never have been able to recognize and put that stuff together.
It's only when you try to get off the stuff that you start to realize what this is. And, I mean, people ask me about sucrose addiction, and I say, you know, like, try to take candy away from a little kid, and you'll find out what happens.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's vicious. And so... You know, I mean, it took me a long time. Then I was off. I decided I'm not going to mainline this stuff anymore, you know?
Yeah.
And Sugar Trap, the video talks about this, that, you know, you're not mainlining, but I'm not taking, you know, you hear this from people, I'm not taking any sucrose. I mean, sugar, you know, and you hear that, and what happens? Apparently, in the video, they have this, a piece of apple pie. How many spoons of sugar are there in a piece of apple pie? I guess. Well, they say 5 spoons. How many spoons of sugar are there? I mean, what is the sucrose content of salad dressing?
Yeah, it's probably
40%.
Wow.
You know, stuff like this. This is why that video I was suggesting. Pardon me?
Of course, things like breakfast cereal are heavily laden.
Exactly, like about 40%, you know, and 50%, you know, and so
even
on.
Even things that you would think are savory items, like, you know, spaghetti sauces.
Mm. Ketchup.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Right.
So
it's everywhere.
Yeah, so then I got, okay, I got hip at that point. I said, well, I'm getting off sucrose. And I went on a fast.
Wow.
And I was, you know, I'm not going to eat anything, you know? And I thought, well, a little bit of...
tough to follow that in the long run.
Yeah, but, you know, when I came back off the fast, I thought, well, I'm going to have just tea with a little bit of honey. That's not sucrose. Wrong again. I found out, you know, after a couple of really bizarre, you know, triggering experiences. I went through all the symptoms and all this again, you know, and I said, what's going on? I can't understand this. I'm off the stuff, and yet, you know, these same symptoms. I can't understand this. And I started looking at the honey, and I realized, well, it says pure. It's honey. It's pure. And then I checked in further, and somebody said to me, don't you know there's sucrose in the honey? What's the matter with you? And I said, what are you talking about? You know, it says pure on the honey, you know.
Yeah, but of course it's just, it occurs in nature, I guess, is the problem.
Well, actually, no.
Really?
No, it does. The sucrose is man-made, and that's what I found out. I found out that there's about 20 to 30%, up to 40% sucrose, even in the so-called pure honey. All right? And the reason why is because in the spring and in the winter and in the whatever months they are, the bees, there are no blossoms, especially in Ontario. What they do is they feed the bees sucrose. So the bees obviously rework it into the honey, and it gets into the honey, and they call it pure.
And it is in the sense that they haven't specifically put additives in.
And they haven't put it in there so that it's fine.
They put additives into the creatures that make it.
Right, and they call it, that's pure. So, I mean, we've written letters to the Ministry of Health, you know, saying, you know, Diane Marlowe, and so on. And well, she said, we'll pass it on. We'll look into it, you know. And, of course, you know, you never hear back from it. And the bottom line is, you know, we've tried to find honey without sucrose. Good luck. Try to find it. And apparently there is an apiarist by the name of Moffat here somewhere, and in Ontario, and there's seven, you know. But apparently everybody's lying. You can't get a straight story in, and from anybody. And we've suggested to the health department. I say, well, why not label this as like a drug that or alcohol? You know, you have the labels, yeah. Alcohol content. There should be sucrose content labels. You know.
Yeah.
All right. Now,
given how many, I mean, for instance, there are people that have terrible allergic reactions to various things, and there's been efforts at one time or two to get those ingredients labeled on products. You would think that sucrose would be in the same category.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is. It should be. And this is the whole point. And, of course, the public, you know, when people come to our meetings, they are afraid. They're afraid because they have been told repeatedly, you know, this is the real thing, you know.
Yeah, right.
And, they I want to quit, but, like, the bottom line is they're not ready. You know, it took me a long, long time, you know, many years of, you know, experimenting and, you know, finally,
yeah.
And sharing and, you know, getting back with other members. And
well, it sounds like the other part of that, too, is that it's a double whammy, because it's not just that the willingness to quit is required, so is a huge commitment to finding, like, a whole new diet, in effect, because so much...
Mm-hmm.
Of what people customarily eat is
precisely it.
Sucrose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I have to make. I make my own breads. I make everything from scratch, generic foods. You know.
Yeah.
The good news is that as George Ozawa in his book Zen Macrobiotics, he talks about the kingdom. That's where you arrive at ultimately is this. Feeling of happy, joyous, and free, as they call it in Alcoholics Anonymous, this feeling of just being right,
yeah.
Of feeling good and joyous. I cannot describe. I mean, I've medicated my life for everything under the sun, you know, practically, and I cannot compare it to the feeling of just being naturally healthy and I could say naturally high. And it's just a feeling of joy, a joy de vivre, you know, you're just happy to be alive, that's it. And it's just, I don't know how to explain that feeling any other way than that precisely as the way he put it, being in the kingdom.
Yeah.
And not only that, the other good news is that, your concentration levels, your higher brain functions kick in. It's just awesome what happens, you know, the transformation. And
now, for most people, is this stuff sort of...
And, of course, the food tastes better, excuse me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The food tastes better. The food is wonderful, you know, natural, whole food, whole spices and herbs, wonderful. You were saying, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just wondering if for most people this stuff ends up being tied together, because you were making the link for you between the sucrose addiction and, and the excessive television, excessive, outside media stimulation.
Mm-hmm. Well, they work hand in hand, I think.
Yeah, is that sort of the typical experience of people that you know?
Exactly. There is I think, you know, if we're talking about the addiction, I think in general, one could say, as William Duffy did in his book Sugar Blues, that ultimately, you know, the entire society is pre-diabetic. You know, we're all, in one sense or another, addicted to these things, you know. The problem is, what do you do about it if you want to, you know, get out of, you know, extreme, I mean, there's extremes, you know, like maybe somebody's addicted and they still have some sort of a functional existence. Then again, on the other hand, you know, the person may not have, you know.
Yeah. Well, I guess it raises the question, too. I mean, are there, in your view, sort of degrees of the, of, you know, the use of these things?
I think, of course, it's just as in AA, we talk about high bottoms and low bottoms. We're talking about people who are high bottoms, who are still functional in society.
Right.
You know, they have a job, they have, you know, they don't really notice it.
Yeah.
And then there's the low bottoms who are, you know, getting the diseases, they're getting diabetes, they're getting cancer, they're getting heart disease,
yeah.
they're becoming schizoid, you know, they've got umpteen kinds of problems, and then they turn to other drugs and other chemicals to medicate these things, or other addictions to medicate these addictions.
Yeah. I guess that's what I find, one of the things that I find really intriguing in this.
Sorry.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah. One of the things I find really intriguing in this, and I, is sort of where that line is between something that is, because any one of us might develop, you know, a bad eating habit that could make us sick.
Mm-hmm.
How does that differ from an addiction? At what point does it become, at what point are we the victims of bad habits, partly because we don't know any better, and at what point do we become people who have sucrose addiction?
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that. That's the perennial question that we get from people who say, you know, well, when do you become an addict, you know?
Yeah.
And I can say that many years ago when I was sitting in a parking lot drinking rubbing alcohol with a rubby, wondering whether or not I was an alcoholic and what you had to do to become one, my rubby companion said to me, you know, you're already one, so, you know, stop wondering. And I was very upset about that because I didn't want to hear that. And I said, how can you prove it? And he says, well, then just ask yourself a simple question. Could you imagine going the rest of your life without a drink? Well, of course, at that time, I couldn't imagine going 5 minutes without a drink, so I knew right away that, you know, in fact, you know, maybe I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I had to admit it. In fact, it's, you know, dawned on me, yes, I'm an alcoholic. So I had to accept that if I wanted to change it. Now, if one were to apply the same question to this sucrose, could I imagine going the rest of my life without a chocolate bar, without a pop, without candy, without alcohol, without cigarettes, and then without television? You know, I think you get the gist of what I'm saying.
Yeah. But then again, a lot of those things.
And I like the word "but." So there's the high bottoms in society. You know, we're okay, so we're still functional. And then, you know, but there's always the yet. They say we haven't. And AA, there's the big slogan that says yet. You know, well, I haven't killed anybody yet. I haven't been to prison yet, so I'm still okay. You know.
Right.
But it's like only a matter of time before the entire society does get to a point. Through, because if you realize what's happening here, it's almost what Kenneth Clark, Galbraith, sorry, was speaking of. It's impoverishment by substitution. We are impoverishing our entire culture by substituting substances that deliver empty calories and no nutrition, that, you know, cut off the higher brain functions, and then in terms of the media, we're not getting anything that's, you know, much. A light happening in the media because the products that are being sold are products that are, I won't say all of them, but in general, the most, they say the most highly advertised products are the ones that are the least, the least nutritional or beneficial, whatever.
Yeah. No,
you know the theory I'm talking about
Absolutely.
Am I right about it?
Well, I think you are. I mean, I guess the thing that I find interesting, and maybe this is not...
So we're not feeding our brains, and we're not feeding our bodies, and we're getting kind of burnt out, burnt in a way.
I guess the thing I'm curious about, and maybe this isn't really that important, the distinction in the long haul, but the thing I was curious about is how much of that is sort of a bad collective lifestyle, and how much of that is a kind of, I hesitate to use the word illness, but an addiction. How much of that I'm just sort of curious where the boundary is. How much of it is just because there are people who sort of fall into routines without necessarily being addicted, but what they're doing is they're falling into a routine because they don't really know any better, or it's what's convenient, or it's what's available, and the result is that they're not getting the nutrition, whether that's physical or metaphorical, that they need.
Mm-hmm. Well, to answer that, there's two points, I think, to answer that question, and that's the point. One is that in terms of addictions and compulsive and obsessive behavior, and it's up to the individual to figure out, I think the best way to look at it is in terms of what is functional and what is not functional. And if a person decides, I'm watching I'm never 1 minute away from some sort of escapism, and I should get a life, and I can't seem to be able to get away from that. And so, the awareness comes that I am not in a functional mode. This is dysfunctional. This is taking my life away from me. I'm leasing my eyes and ears out, and I'm not getting any pay for it, As Marshall McLuhan says, we lease our eyes and ears out to the media.
Yeah.
And I'm not getting anything back. And it's the idea of, what is functional in your... every individual has to decide. I mean, it's the same thing with a person who drinks alcohol. One person has a glass of wine. I mean, it's okay. It doesn't bother them. Another person has a glass of wine and then...
Okay, it's April the 22nd, 1996. I just did some pranayama with my Walkman, and it looks like we're being pressured to tape here, but I don't understand why, because there seems to be a lot of tape left. Maybe it's because it's at the beginning of the machine or whatever, I don't know. But whatever the cause, there is a beep out there. So anyway, I then uploaded to Sam's portion of this Hatha Yoga. And I'm doing some pranayama, and I got my Harvard graphics and the mouse and everything working today on the graphics machine. And this is the text machine up here. I sent some stuff off, some email off. And it seems like everything is technologically up to par and working circa 1986 technology. And I entered into my notes today on this page. If we are all robots, the idea comes from Marshall McLuhan's War and Peace in the Global Village, and also the ideas of orthopraxy that are described in Elul's Propaganda and Technological Society books, and my terms that are described in the little pamphlet that Media Free Times put out called About Techno-Usury, quote, techno-usury, unquote, that the realization came to me that what the propaganda machine is programming everyone to do is to go into debt slavery, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. And the reason why, this is the from the observer's vantage point of observing what is in fact happening, and if in fact these are knee-jerk reactions generated by the propaganda machinery, then it is obvious that everyone is being led into debt. And there was a little article in Forbes magazine about an attorney who is now working as answering the for the fire department, answering the phones. And he's in debt $58,000 to start, to study for his law degree. So anyway, I'm grateful for a Debtors Anonymous program and a Workaholics Anonymous program and Alcoholics Anonymous program, so that I was able to get bankrupt, and my debts have been written off, and that I'm not getting further and further into debt. But even so, individually, that's good. But this whole idea that the whole society